But, well, to introduce you to it, so here, this one and this one, these are two rooms in which Banti's collection is held. So these are his Dharma books, those are his other books. In here, there are also books by Banti and books by other order members. All the works of Dr. Ambedkar are there. And the 100 books have got their own shelves in amongst a beautiful carving of the Heart Sutra. And there are various of Banti's artefacts also around. I think the 100 books, I mean, we don't know that they're exactly the ones, but they're roughly that sort of era. But these beautiful kind of maroon and sepia kind of faded bindings, there's a sort of beauty about them in their age. There's an archive room and office over there, and then there's a lovely room down the end there with the curved windows, which we've thought of as a kind of seminar room. And in there, there's a full reference library which came from the Dharmavastu collection. And the idea is that those books could be referred to during study or borrowed. And there's another room there of those books, which could be added to over time. That's part of our idea, that we'll try and have a sort of accessions element to the library. I think Banti wants his own collections to be kept as they are. I suppose there is a sort of historical value to that. But we want to think of this as a kind of expanding collection. Also, there's a shrine room here, which will contain a number of Banti's rupas and tankers. It's looking very beautiful today. It seems to really complete the building, I must say. And this space and these balconies are intended to be a sort of exhibition space as well as a reflection space. And the idea is that come Banti's 90th birthday, which is in August, we'll have another event. So come back then, even bigger event, these spaces will be set out with an exhibition. And behind those walls are rooms for people to stay in, which are being thought of as rooms for pilgrims, which I think is quite suitable. I'll say a bit more about that later. So that will be when the whole space is fully ready, but from today we could think of it as being open, and very luckily for all of us, Dana Samudra, who lives here in the Addis Dana community, is going to be its librarian, so it will have a presence here and a way to welcome people in. I think that's lovely. I'm going to say a bit about the sort of significance of libraries in general. There's too much to say, but I'll just give you a few thoughts. There are so many great libraries in the world, mythically great. You know, the library at Alexandria was a famous one, but also I think I can say our own library at Nalanda. I've been reading about the great library at Nalanda, which was eventually destroyed at the end of the 12th century, but for hundreds of years. Well, Nalanda, the university, the Buddhist university in India, attracted scholars and Dharma practitioners from all the Buddhist world at that time. And I read a little bit about the library, which I'll tell you, but I've been there myself to the ruins. They're enormous, the vast ruins, they just stretch out. And of course it's so sad, but very touching. I remember seeing a little sign saying, "Here Shantideva taught the Bodhicharya Avatara." I think, goodness me. But here's a description of the old library. A new Nalanda University is being set up, and this is part of what they say about the old one. "The memory of the iconic library that distinguished ancient Nalanda is undiminished even 800 years after its destruction. In fact, nothing denotes the violent end to the knowledge enshrined at Nalanda more than the image of the burning library, a library whose vast resources are captured in the vivid image of the length of time it took to burn." Apparently that's true, it took months. It was burning at least 3 months. "There are many historical accounts of the Nalanda library that are available, and all convey the deep significance of this building with its untold treasures. According to Tibetan accounts, ancient Nalanda University's library, called Dharma Ganja, consisted of three grand buildings called Ratnasagara, Ratnadadi, and Ratnaganjaka. In the nine-storied Ratnadadi, sacred scripts called Pranyaparamita Sutra and tantric works such as Samajya Guhya were stored. The Chinese scholar monk Xuanzang recorded, "The whole establishment is surrounded by a brick wall. One gate opens into the great college, from which are separated eight other halls standing in the middle. The grandeur of the Nalanda library encapsulated the spirit of the university. Indeed, as the central and dominant architectural unit, Dharma Ganja literally opened the way to learning." Well, that reminds me of somewhere. I'm normally a fan of the Lonely Planet Guide, but I was a bit amused to read in the Lonely Planet Guide to India about Xuanzang, the famous Chinese traveller who studied and taught for some years at Nalanda. Now, if you read Xuanzang's own account of his journey to Nalanda, he journeyed for years. He crossed a burning desert. He was kidnapped by bandits, all manner of things, just to reach that longed-for destination. And then he studied there very intensively, and then he walked all the way back. So actually, I'm quite moved by how many people are making a great effort to come to Adisthana, hopefully no burning deserts to cross. But there's that feeling of pilgrimage associated with books and Dharma learning, which it's a trope that you see throughout Buddhist history, and I think it still is applicable.